Chapter 10. Lysander. Iron Fist.
I make my grand entrance to my party on a Pegasus from Horatia's private herd. Slipping off its back onto the hull of the Lightbringer, I greet Cicero and Horatia with kisses, Glerastes with a nod, my Praetorian guard with a salute, and turn to address my waiting guests. Some are friends. Some are Atalantia's creatures. Most are somewhere in between. All have come expecting to see me fail. They just might.
It is an accepted truism that in the Corps only the Carthii build warships, not the Votum. The Votum are fine builders, yes, but terrestrial builders, simpletons in the sophisticated shadow of Carthii astral construction supremacy.
Tonight we dash that myth. I hope. I have bet everything on it. The ship does look like a monster. It has no paint, and its hull is heterogeneous and patched with the metal of ruined Republic ships. The front is ghastly heavy, but there are reasons for this. If it flies, that is. The fire of braziers whips in the wind. The golds gather in white furs and wear crowns of flowers to symbolize the planet's rebirth. It is cold at this altitude, and it will get colder. The ship is the largest warship in existence, 8 kilometers long, 1.5 kilometers thick. It has not yet lifted off.
But even lying on its side, our perch on its back provides a grand view of Heliopolis, cupped between the mountains and the sea. The whole city is watching, and so are interested parties all across the Corps. I lift my voice.
My noble kinsman, I am honored you could join me on this auspicious day. When Darrow came to Mercury, he claimed to bring freedom. Instead, he brought death. Mercury was not the first planet to fall to the Reaper, but it will be the last. There's a stir in the crowd as Tharsis and a dozen of his glamorous friends arrive late and very drunk. Indecorously, they choose grav boots over the ivory skiffs offered to my guests. They crash down in a swirl of silks and scents and doff their military boots to pull out fur slippers. They do not join to listen to my speech, but instead head for the menagerie of carvelings near the bow. Tharsis causes a racket by teasing a caged manticore. Cicero raises his eyebrow at me, annoyed at the impropriety. I carry on.
Mercury is no stranger to hardship. Closest to the bosom of the sun, only ingenuity and hard work have made her people prosper. I thank my hosts, the Gens Votum, for their hospitality, but also for reminding me of those ancient virtues. Only ingenuity and hard work can beat defeat into victory. For over a decade, this ship, once the Morning Star, was Darrow's greatest weapon. He sailed it here to break Mercury. Instead, Mercury broke both him and his ship. Not content with that, Mercury then rebuilt his ship, and tonight it will set sail for the first time.
I lift my cup to the Votum. Horatia, Cicero, from ashes you craft diamonds. May fortune long favour your house. I lead the rest in drinking. Amidst my guests, Valeria rolls her eyes at her brothers. After the muted applause dies down, I tap a foot on the hull beneath us.
You all know this storied ship. It was commissioned by Octavia and built in the dockyards of Ganymede.
It was stolen by Darrow during the Battle of Ilium when he slaughtered noble Fabii with his Valkyrie savages and then destroyed those proud dockyards over Ganymede.
Those sins have come back to haunt him, as will this ship.
The golds stump their feet.
Today, thanks to Gens Votum, Glerastes the Master Maker, and my creditors, whom I beg to wait until after the party to twist my thumbs.
There's generous laughter at that.
It is my honour to present your dance floor for the evening, and our next great weapon in the battle to restore order to our spheres, the Lightbringer.
Hundreds of golds join me in smashing down their wine glasses on the hull. Cicero, Horatia, and I draw our razors and cut our palms and drip the blood onto the ship to ward off the bad luck of a rechristening.
Then the brother and sister wait to see if we're bankrupt, and our guests wait for the ship to fail. I hail my bridge, where my friend Pytha waits in her captain's chair.
Captain Pytha, bring me the sky.
By your will, Dominus.
I hold my breath. The tests were a success, but in the nest of vipers that is gold power politics, sabotage is as common as bribery. A seismic groan comes from the ship as the new reactors power on. Spilled wine ripples, the groan deepens, the broken glass dances into the drops of blood. Whispers spread, a few laughs from Valeria and her brothers. The groan turns into a roar, and the Lightbringer begins to rise. I close my eyes, overwhelmed with emotion. When I open them again, we are in the clouds. I grip Horatio's hand. Cicero kisses my forehead. I embrace Glerastes. They've done it. We've done it. I've done it.
All of Gold Society snickered when I said I would rebuild the ship without Carthii engineers. None of my guests laugh now as we pass through the clouds.
Shrouded in vapor, the golds look like ghosts. If their silence tells me they know that today a new power was born, their applause, when it comes, shows me the difference between hosting games and putting a moonbreaker into the sky. 5 kilometers up, Pytha brings us to a holding pattern over the cloud layer that covers the city. All of Heliopolis was watching. Fireworks shot for the people glow through the clouds like coals. The whole planet will feel this victory. Swamped with congratulations, even from some of Atalantia's veterans, I remain humble and defer all credit to Horatia, Glerastes, and their thousands of engineers and labourers, all of whom are inside the ship at their own party, enjoying better wine than my gold guests. I made sure of that. Though Cicero had little to do with the effort surrounding the Lightbringer, he's soon off to enjoy the rewards.
Not used to sycophancy, I say to Horatia, once the wave of congratulators has abated.
No, she says, a little dazed. Her cheeks are flushed. Not from the praise, but from the private satisfaction of accomplishing a feat of monstrous logistical and technical difficulty. To be honest, I'm a little contemptuous of the tidal shift in the manners of our guests, she says.
It's about time the reformers had a bit more muscle, I say.
Enjoy it. She smiles at that and takes my hand. It's the first time it feels more than friendly. You have work to do, and so do I.
I'd rather run diagnostics with you and Pytha.
No, you wouldn't. You're a political animal, Lysander. It's been too long since my blockhead one like you. We need you to hunt.
Money, manpower, mass, I say. I've got my marks.
She squeezes my hand and we part. My party is tame by gold standards. There are no orgies, as might be included on Venus, but there are pinks and red acrobats on lines strung amongst the trees of the orchard created by my growing stable of household botanists. In the trees there are carved creatures rumoured to be half-cat, quarter-bird, and one-quarter-lizard, though I can only attest to the size of the bill I paid to my new household carvers. Some of the drunker golds, Tharsus's friends, have given up taunting the manticore in the menagerie and decided instead to climb the trees and investigate. I'm excited for them to learn the arboreal carvelings have stingers.
Lysander, my boy, Glerastes calls and waves me over. There's someone you must meet.
I turn to see my friend arm-in-arm with a striking young woman with a very serious face.
Pallas Augreca, the captain of the Bellona racing team, I say. I see you survived Tharsus's compliments.
Pallas is not tall. The top of her head barely comes to my sternum. Neither is she muscled like a front-line peerless. Yet there's something fearsome about her, as if she's been slapped earlier in the day and has been carrying it around all day to give back to someone else. Her skin is umber, her hair a dense, proud gold-brown tangle bound back with an unfashionable platinum eagle clasp.
Her eyes are bright and impudent, and stare at me as if she's tossed me a ball and is expecting me to do something with it. "I hope you are stronger than you look, too," she says, without an ounce of flirtation. A live eagle perches on her shoulder harness. She feeds it carpaccio from the tray of a passing pink server.
"You'll have to be stronger than you look to keep this ship from Atalantia's hands. What's to say she won't just take it? The law, of course."
"It's silent these days, didn't you know?" she says.
"I didn't introduce you to so you could fence," Glorasti says.
"No, you did not," Pelas says, deadpan.
"So, Julia did send an envoy after all, I surmise."
Pallas's narrowing eyes tell me I've hit the mark.
"I was just hoping to see the Lady Bellona herself here for the games."
"We're at war," she says. "She is busy on Earth preparing for the summit."
"Ah, the summit again. Waste of time, really. She should be busy over Mars, if you ask me. I've only just spoken with Helios Aulox. He's of the same mind. Perhaps you know if Atalantia intends to finally declare an assault on Mars once and for all."
Pallas cannot be tempted into intrigue. "The Lady Bellona told me to relay a message to you. You have the name of a sovereign. Now you have the ship, and you certainly have the debt. But until you prove you have the guts, she will not cross the dictator, and neither will her money."
"Because she fears a visit from Atlas?" I ask, and resist the instinct to search for his pale face amongst my roving guests. She shrugs. "Only an idiot would not." She looks me up and down. "And Lady Bellona is no idiot."
Her eagle hisses at me. It's an attack bird, I've noticed. Metal-reinforced talons. Lovely.
"The lady was kind enough to send me Roan."
I glance at Glorastes, thinking of Darrow and Cassius in Apollonius's cells.
"Perhaps soon I'll have a gift in kind for the lady to open a dialogue. Something dear to her heart."
My concealed comm crackles with a priority message. Roan reports from within the Lightbringer.
"Dominus, it is urgent."
Pallas's eyebrows creep upward.
"Problem? It seems we're out of wine. Excuse me, good lady."
I step away from the party to have the conversation near a row of Praetorians. "Roan, go."
"There has been a nuclear explosion at the dockyards of Venus. The Carthii have used it as a pretext to launch a full-scale invasion of the dockyards. The Minotaur is asking for reinforcements."
I reach for the mind's eye to quell the reflexive panic. The sounds of the party shrink away. My heart slows. My welling anxieties slide from chaos into even ranks and await my attention. I look past the Praetorians to the dark sky. The clouds move below.
"I see. Is that all?" "The situation is still unfolding, Dominus."
"Who else knows this?" I ask.
"Anyone with a telescope."
"Do we still have eyes on Atlas?"
"Kyber has him in Tyche, questioning coppers."
I trust Kyber's competency as much as I trust Roan's. Still, if anyone could spot a whisper following him, it would be Atlas.
"Have Pytha prep our contingencies and get on deck. I need you here."
The threat of exposure is severe. If the Carthii take prisoners, the Martian exiles will tell their torturers how they got to the dockyards. Not good. Cicero meets my eyes from across the party. He was listening too, and had enough sense not to come over. I hail his comm.
"Cicero, I need you to tell Tharsis to get out of here now. I don't want a situation that I can't control. Keep him away from the Carthii. On it." I search for Valeria Alcarthii. Amidst her brothers, her head is tilted as she listens to someone in her ear. She's just finding out as well.
Her brother points out Tharsis. Apollonius's brother is wrestling a small carveling atop a tree to the laughter of his friends. Sensing my distress, Glorastes abandons Pallas and comes over. I deploy a jam field from my ring so our guests can't overhear us.
"Dockyards have gone bad," Glorastes asks.
I nod. Thankfully, he has the composure to conceal his panic and his urge to remind me his doubts about the Minotaur.
What does Round think?
I spot him exiting the hull via a lift. He jogs over.
You need to act as if nothing's happened, Round says when he joins. But Apollonius is demanding reinforcements. If we want to move out, we should mobilize our legions and Cicero's as soon as possible. Mercury is closer to Venus than Earth is. We can beat Atalantia there.
If we aid him, then we're in open rebellion against our lawful dictator, I say.
In the orchard, Cicero has delivered the news. Varsus comes down from the tree to find the Carthii staring at him. He shouts for his friends. As he desperately tries to collect the deviants lost in their own fun, the Carthii make their move.
I rush to intercept. I almost get bulldozed by Valeria's brothers, but I get in front of her before she's close enough to cause Tharsis harm. She's within my personal jam field. Her brothers are not. I cover my mouth. Do you want your inheritance?
It is burning, she says, so I'll burn Tharsis. Move, or I'll start thinking you had something to do with it.
Your father is not headed for an easy victory, but rather the fight of his life. She scoffs.
The only threat was the atomics. I hardly think a handful of greys will stop our legions.
I roll the dice. The Minotaur has 80,000 Martian veterans. She blinks as if she'd just run into an invisible wall.
How do you know that?
Because I smuggled them to him in the iron caravans.
You are in bed with the Minotaur?
She looks as if she wants to drive a knife into my stomach. I can give you your inheritance, all of it. You, not your father, you.
How?
No time. My life is in your hands. If you expose me, I'm dead, and you get the petty satisfaction of revenge.
If you say yes to my offer, you can be the head of House Carthii in a week.
Her eyes dart to Tharsis. He's gathered his friends. In a tight pack, they head for the table where they stacked their grav boots. Calculating her chances of surviving her sibling rivalry and the time it would take to achieve the same goal, she looks me in the eyes and says,
Yes, ambition is a reckless master.
I turn off my jam field. Horatia will be in touch. Valeria watches Tharsis and his friends equip their grav boots and signals her brothers to stand down. Tharsis glances at me, his face pale, and takes off into the sky. His friends follow hot on his heels. They head east, off the back of the Lightbringer. My other guests have noticed the commotion now and whisper to one another. I return to Rhone and Glorastes. Cicero joins me as I reach them.
Lysander, we have radar signatures inbound,
Pytha says from the bridge.
I see them, Cicero says, spotting a squadron of dark shapes in the sky.
Not ships. Men.
Are those yours, Lysander? They're not ours.
No. Intercept them, I tell Rhone. He motions the nearby Praetorians. They form up and are about to take off.
Lysander, hold, Pytha says. They're broadcasting the dictator's writ, Olympic tag.
Everyone turns to look at me.
It's the fear night, she says.
A chill goes through me.
It's a legal action, then. You have zero jurisdiction, Rhone says.
Stand down, I mutter. Rhone recalls the Praetorians. Others see the inbound squadron and rush to the edge of the Lightbringer's hull to watch. Fear's squadron, which must be made of Gorgons, descends from a higher altitude than Tharsis and his fleeing friends. They fall in the night sky like crows. Tharsis sees the interlopers and alters his escape trajectory. He and his friends dive down toward the blanket of clouds and disappear into them. The Gorgons do not follow. My guests gasp and point as the clouds stutter with light. This time it is not fireworks. Tharsis flew straight into a trap waiting in the clouds. A few moments pass. Then Tharsis and only four of his friends race back out of the clouds. They flee right up into the waiting Gorgons. Disdaining weapons, the Gorgons catch Tharsis's friends with their hands, pin their arms, and start beating them to death mid-air. A single dusky figure emerges from the clouds to watch the scene. Atlas. Tharsis spots Atlas. Even at this distance I can feel Tharsis's panic. The Gorgons block his exit, leaving him only one path of escape. He flees across the sky, back the way he came, to land hard amidst the party. Valeria and her brothers laugh like hyenas at the sight of him. He is bloody, his left arm is broken, his fur coat ripped to shreds. He waves his razor and he calls out to me.
Loon! Loon! I am your guest! You must protect me!
I lift my hands. I am sorry. I cannot break the law. They have the iron fist.
Help me!
Tharsis screams at the guests. No one raises a finger.
Help!
Then he hears Atlas land behind him. He goes still. Dread darkens his eyes. Shuddering, Tharsis turns to see the Fear Knight watching him from behind his pale mask of office. Tall, lithe, in addition to his grav boots, Fear wears the grey armour styled with a moth motif. His blade is a long black haster, slick with dark blood, and his right hand is sheathed in a heavy metal gauntlet. The iron fist, writ of the dictator.
Tharsis looks for escape. There is none. The Carthii cackle and urge him to come to them.
Help me! Someone! Help me!
He screams and starts for me, only to find Roan and a line of Praetorians barring his path. I feel a hand on my chest. There's nothing to do, Cicero says. The Fear Knight comes for Tharsis. Finding neither escape nor aid, Tharsis resolves to die well. After a life of privilege, he is denied his last wish. His enraged attack is easily turned by the Fear Knight. After three slashes, Atlas raises the iron fist, and Tharsis is snared by the device's status field. He floats, suspended in zero-g. Atlas cuts off Tharsis's feet first, then his hands. The severed parts float in the field with their former owner. Atlas makes a fist with the gauntlet, and Tharsis screams as his limbs crackle and compound fracture in a dozen places. Only then does Atlas release him. Tharsis flops, screaming to the hull. Wiggling, worm-like, to nowhere, he gasps as Atlas grabs him by the hair and drags him toward the menagerie. Atlas takes a golden serving bowl from a table as he passes, puts it on Tharsis's head, bends the edges with his hands to enclose Tharsis's head, then stuffs Tharsis into the manticore cage. I look away as the beast feeds on Tharsis's broken body. His screams echo out from the bowl. My eyes meet Pallas's. The Bellona client pats her belly. Atlas is headed my way. My Praetorians make a wall between us. Atlas removes his mask for Roan. His eyes are dark jewels set in a gaunt philosopher's face. I read in them paragraphs of disappointment. He holds up the iron fist.
To oppose me is treason against the society. I am the will of your lawfully appointed dictator. You of all people are no traitor, Flavinius. Move.
I set a hand on Roan's shoulder and guide him out of the way. Cicero shrinks away from me, terrified at Atlas's approach. Glorastes comes closer, protective. Horatia finally joins us from her work on the bridge, coming up from a lift in the hull to see Atlas walking toward me. She goes very still. Atlas lifts his voice for my guests.
The truce between House Roth and House Carthii has been broken by the Minotaur.
An inquest has been launched, the verdict of which will be announced at the summit on Earth 1 week hence.
He comes closer and taps my chest with the fist to make it formal.
You have been summoned to report to New Sparta. I'm in the middle of my... You have 2 minutes to set your affairs. Do not abuse my leniency.
Atlas helps himself to a shrimp from a server's tray and goes to the manticore cage to whip the creature back from Tharsis's tattered body. He leaves the body but takes the head and the golden bowl that protected its features from the manticore. Then he strides off in silence to await his ship.
Even the Carthii have gone quiet.
My friends are terrified.
You can't go with him, Glorasti says. Lysander, you have the Lightbringer. You have the Votum. You don't have to obey.
Cicero swallows. We can't take on Atalantia. Not head to head. Not with three Lightbringers. Horatia joins. She sees the political trap.
He was touched by the Iron Fist. He must go. It's a trap. Atalantia wants him to reject the summons. She's looking for a public infraction to bring you up on charges. Your popularity won't matter then. All options will be available to her.
Glorastes grips my arm again, imploring.
Lysander, if you go to Earth, you'll never leave. She will kill you or make you her puppet.
I did not expect Atlas so soon. I don't know how he fooled Kyber and lost her tail,
but as soon as news of the dockyards came, I knew I would have limited time to act.
I must go, I say. This is why we created contingencies. Atalantia won't kill me yet. Horatia, Roan, we will play peacemakers one more time. Contingency 11 is our best hope. I've already spoken with Valeria. She's in. You know what to do. They nod in agreement. Cicero is green with worry.
Are you certain?
We cannot lose Apollonius, not now. A dozen ships in hand are worth 100 on the ledger. We're in the game now, my friends. Stay true to each other, and we will succeed.
I hope.
I say my farewell to Cicero and Horatia before taking Glorastes by the arm. Remember, I want you to get to the safe house in the mountains as soon as I depart. Keep Exter close. His face is pained, but he tries to be strong for me. He takes my shoulders.
Before you, I was broken, lost. Hope had fled with youth.
He thumps my chest.
Hope beats here, in you.
In Glorastes, I feel the presence of the love Octavia stole from me with her pandemonium chair. The love of a parent for a son. I will see you soon, Glorastes. I kiss the wizened man on the brow and tear myself away to walk with Roan toward Atlas's landing shuttle. My guests may cry out their complaints against the dictator, but none dare intervene. I'm counting on you most of all, Roan. We need more than just Apollonius and his men from the docks.
I understand, Dominus. I will not fail you, Roan says.
Reluctant, he hands me over to the custody of the landing Gorgons. They scan me after I board their shuttle. They miss nothing, not even the implant in my ear canal. The last words I hear before they take it come from Python the bridge. Good luck, Moon Boy. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for your cooperation, Lysander, Atlas says as the shuttle lifts off.
He takes off his cape and hands the Iron Fist to an attendant.
The Styx will rendezvous with us a day out from Mercury.
We will take it the rest of the way to Earth. Atalantia thinks you look too martial with that scar. She sent her best carver to better shape you to fit her desires.
He glances at the burn on my face.
But first, she has a message for you.
He turns to leave the passenger compartment and calls back to us Gorgons.
Make him shit blood.
The first fist hits me in the kidneys.